Next Step 263, June 20th, 2013.
Hi, this is Susie from In Your Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast at epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, Blueberry, and now on Stitcher Radio. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Voskan, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to and inviting you to The Next Step. Hey, this is a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, well, about all kinds of things. It's actually looking at life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. That's the first, that's the ultimate, okay? But polished up for today, we call that Armenodoxy. We're inviting you to take a look with us, take a step with us. This podcast is part of the expanding vision of the In Your Shoes mission, and if you're ready, I know I am, let's take it. Let's take the next step. Beautiful morning here in Southern California. I actually tried to do this from outside. I went into the garden, and it is just like morning. It's just like bright sunlight and crisp weather. It was so exciting over there. But, you know, I'm not the only one excited by it. There's dogs barking. There's all kinds of stuff. So I said, let me go back in and just kind of open a window and take a look. I know. It's not the same. But you know what? We're together right now. So let's share a few moments together. I'm so glad you're with us today. We are starting our sixth year. We kicked it off last week. We're going to be having a celebration of our fifth anniversary. So it's interesting. You know, it's like when you go to Armenia, I remember they asked you your age, and it was not about how old you are, but what year you're entering. So if you're like 5 years old, you are entering your sixth year. So always remember this when it comes down to identifying these podcasts, because after a while you go by these numbers, and you know it's that whole idea that there is no age between 0 and 1, right? And you remember this was like an issue during the millennium celebration. Like, when is the millennium? When does it start? Is it January 1st, 2000 or 2001? You know, because the year 0 to 1 was counted with the first century. 0 to 1 is first century. So technically 1900 is part of the 18th century. 2000 is part of the 20th century. So anyway, I'm. It's too wild for me. You know what? We're in 2013 right now. We are celebrating our fifth anniversary of operation. 5 years we've been doing it. We are celebrating the sixth year, the beginning of the sixth year. Okay, is that okay? Does that suffice? I know. I get messed up with all these numbers and everything, but it is fun to look at them. We're going to be looking at numbers, actually, today. We're going to be looking at youth. You know, our church in Glendale is called the St. Peter Armenian Church and Youth Ministry Center. So it was, there's always these promotional items that come to any church, you know, like order these pens, order these cups, you know, get these sweatshirts and stuff like that. And they send you small little samples of them. So the other day we got a pen that was written, and because it's such so long, St. Peter Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center is our full name. Well, they couldn't get all that on one line on the pen. So it said St. Peter Armenian Church Youth. and it ended at the T. No H after that. Youth, no ministry center and everything. So, you know why I'm laughing, right? Okay, because being an Armenian church, I mean, isn't that how you pronounce youth? Youth. Because there's no TH in our language, you know? So, and we always hear it, you know, what will happen to the youth? And so that's what I'm going to be talking about today. I'm going to be talking about the youth. What's going on with our youth? I mean, isn't that the penultimate question that any organization has? Certainly, if you are in a church, that is the big, big question. Where are our youth today? Well, I got to tell you, first of all, it is like such an important question to me because it is the cornerstone to my ministry. And in fact, I was blessed that, you know, we started 10 years ago, the Youth Ministry Center in Glendale. And it was with this direction and focus on the youth. But last couple weeks, I've been really challenged because of the different things that are going on in my life. And I'm going to be sharing that with you. Of course, certainly graduation. It's a time of graduation. You're seeing young people graduate, and that gets your mind stirred. Yesterday, I went to the Armenian old age home. Yeah, the other side of the coin, right? And I went to the old age home and I took my son Christopher with me. I said, hey, Chris, you're on summer break. Why don't you come with me and be the deacon during my service over there? And so I took him with me to the senior. It's actually a convalescent home, Armenian Ararat convalescent home. And his mom called him on the phone and I'm overhearing the phone call. He goes, yeah, Mom, I'm with Dad at the Armenian old age home. And without skipping a beat, he just explains to her why he's there. You know, I'm looking for a room for Dad. And it's like, okay, yeah, I know. This is the place we're going to be ending up at. And so I'm standing there. I'm surrounded by just the warmest people all around, you know, and they are just looking at you. So I want to share with you reflections of a priest. You know, when you're a priest inside this area with people at the end of their life, when you're a priest concerned with people at the beginning of their life, the youth, what is going on? And what is this ultimate question? Like, where are the youth? I sat through a clergy meeting and I swear, I mean, we just don't get tired of this question. And I think it's almost like it's rhetorical, right? You know that there's no answer, but you kind of throw it out to show that you're concerned about the where are our youth. And it's interesting because I think I would have approached this completely differently before, but now you realize that it's all part of the game, isn't it? It's the talk that you have to talk within an organization to show that you're concerned with the future propagation of that organization, the future welfare, the well-being of that organization. But what are you doing? When does it come that push comes to shove and you're ready to take the action? And interestingly enough, as I was with the elderly people at the Armenian old age home, I selected a passage which just by chance, because it was actually I was talking more about the foundation. I was building on this idea of foundation, Jesus being the foundation. But the passage that came to us from Matthew chapter 7, if you look a few passages earlier than the foundation chapter, you see that Jesus says, not everyone who calls me Lord, Lord, will I know them? You know, it's people who hear my word and do it. Do the will of God. And so it's interesting because we're always challenged with what should we do about the youth? But who is doing something about the youth? That's the big question, okay? And here's the big one. A couple weeks ago, Time magazine on their front page, the me generation, talked about the millennials. And I've been wanting to share this with you for the last few weeks, but because of a few reasons, you know what, it kind of worked out beautifully because we were able to bring it all together and we're going to be sharing it with you today in a very action-packed adventure of the next step. It's about the youth. So we'll be coming back to that. Also, we have Anush with a great announcement coming up in a few minutes about the Inside the Pomegranate. You're going to be excited about this. I know I am. So that's coming up in a few minutes. Hey, let's kick it off with the song of the day. Okay, I'm going to pick out something incredible. I just got turned on to this. Okay, it's Nina Simone. And I was looking through her videos and I found one that's called Ain't Got No, I Got Life. And well, you'll probably figure out why I liked it so much. But I hate to admit it, it was my first time hearing this. Couple versions I heard, 1968, because that's when I was a youth. Okay, so we're going to be listening to that, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. Enjoy.
Ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweaters, ain't got no perfume, ain't got no love, ain't got no faith. I ain't got no culture, ain't got no mother, ain't got no father, ain't got no brother, ain't got no children, ain't got no aunts, ain't got no uncles, ain't got no love, ain't got no mind. I ain't got no country, ain't got no schooling, ain't got no friends,
recording Nina Simone doing Ain't Got No, I Got Life. Did you love that? Oh, I was so excited about that, especially because it's not just the words. I mean, you listen to the words and she goes from, I ain't got no, but yay, listen, I got life. But listen to the music. It starts off bluesy, and at the end, it's a celebration. It was so beautiful. Anyway, I was very turned on, and I had to share that with you today. Nina Simone will have a link on our show notes today, so you could check out that video. It is a video. It's kind of neat to see that, too. Like I said, check around. There's a few different versions, but this one was, I like 1968. It is kind of a cool year, isn't it? Okay.
Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxen, waxing. Give me down to there, shoulder length longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair.
If you belong to a church, if you are part of a church community, if you're part of any organization, you know one of the big, big issues is how do you find, well, people to take over? How do you find the next generation coming in? And certainly within a church, this is like the ultimate question. Where are the youth? Where is the next generation? And how do you get them in? And so certainly I've been to enough meetings where you hear people talk about this. And I've shared with you throughout the years of doing the next step, I've shared with you some of my own frustrations with the questioning of this. Because the basic question is, okay, what do you mean, where are the youth? They're right in front of you. Get with the program. I mean, why are you treating the youth as something separate? They are part of you. What do you mean? This is the big one that they always give out, right? The youth are our future. Okay. They're your future. So what does that mean? They're not in your present? Think about it. Of course they are. What do you mean they're your future? What are they today? They exist today, don't they? Okay, they are today. So once you start talking in these terms, you've now entered a new conversation. It's not about what's going to happen, but what is happening. And you see, this is an important shift that we need to make. We need to stop thinking about what's going to happen in the future, but say, hey, there is a reality that's taking place right now. Now, before we go any further, let's define what youth is, or at least for our conversation. Because I know many of you, like myself included, you know, you feel young at heart. And at some point, you realize that the body is going to betray you. You may feel as young at heart as you wish, but the body just doesn't do the same things it did when it was young. And take the most absurd example. You may have ran a 4-minute mile when you were, you know, a teenager. Certainly when you're 40, it becomes very, 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 very difficult to do. And by the time you're 50 or 60, you realize that, hey, you know, there's muscles are slowing down. There's different requirements on your body, and your body is reacting in different ways. So an absurd example would be that you can't do a 4-minute mile at age 60, at 70. You may run, you may be able to sprint, but the body does shut down. The body does go through changes. So you need to come to terms with a body that is betraying the feeling that you have inside. Now, inside, we all feel young at heart. Many of us. I don't know about everybody, but I know I do. I know so many people that I've talked to. We feel young at heart. Hey, you know, I feel like I can, well, I could go out with the best. I can put up with the best. But when we're talking about youth, we're specifically targeting that age group. From, let's say, from teenagers to 25, from to 30. You know, there's this group, and it is a generational issue. We all talk about some of the popular generations. For instance, the baby boomers. I belong to the baby boomer generation. Talk about the greatest generation, the one that came. Be people like the Ronald Reagans, you know, these icons for conservative values and everything. So you look at groups of people, 20, 25 years of lifespan, and we've been successful in identifying generations. And so it was interesting that a couple weeks ago, a Time magazine front page article, a cover article, talked about the me generation, and these are the millennials. And in fact, the title does say they are lazy, entitled narcissists who still live with their parents. Why they'll save us. And I'm going to put a link on our show notes to the article because it is very, very good reading. But here's how I want to use this today. Okay, and it is an article by Joe Stein. And you'll find it right inside some very good graphics, too, as far as charts. But let me share with you the whole idea of who are the millennials and why is this important to us talking about Armadoxy. Because we sit around at church meetings and we talk about the youth without including them, without understanding that they are not just some kind of abstract youth, that we have Armenian youth, you have Orthodox youth, you have Christian youth, you have Catholic youth, and you throw them in and you say, well, what are we going to do about these youth? Within the context of Orthodoxy, for instance, right? Well, these youth, these people are also part of a bigger context, part of a bigger generation, and they are susceptible to the standards, they're susceptible to the influences, to the flow that the bigger organization is in. Now, I want you to think about this because I want to share with you some points that are made in this article. But, you know, it's very typical for people to look back and remember their childhood and see it as a glowing, beautiful event that took place in history. And certainly in comparison to what's going on right now, it's very, very tempting for us to look at life today and say, oh, these people are lazy, they're selfish, they're shallow, whatever they may be. But go ask your parents, go ask your grandparents, and they'll tell you that, hey, they thought the same about your generation. They thought the same about subsequent generations. So there, it is typical. You know, as you get older, you become an old codger, you become grumpy, and you look at the young ones and you say, ah, back in my time. But let's try not to do that. Let's try to look at it as objective as we can. If you look at the millennials, you find that millennium generation is like the last 20 years. There's a whole new set of circumstances that has been defined by technology, by the advances in technology. And so you see why I'm bringing it up over here, because really what we do here on The Next Step is, well, it's a result of technology, right? I've shared this with you many times. What we're doing in The Next Step, the ability that here's a priest talking to you and talking and getting the word out throughout the world, is something that just 10 years ago, 20 years ago, would have required capital, it would have required permission. But today, basically, you have a laptop, you have a little bit of internet space, and you're out there. And you certainly can compete with the biggest. You know, you don't need to raise that capital just to get, well, to get, in our case, to do a ministry. So you could see how this excited me when I read this, because the situation with the youth, with the millennials, with the young people, is exasperated because of the technology. Now, let me read a little bit from the article. It says, whereas in the 1950s, families displayed a wedding photo, a school photo, and maybe a military photo in their homes, the average middle-class American family today walks amid 85 pictures of themselves and their pets. I know where your head's going, thinking about your Facebook. The last uploads you made to Facebook, right? What you've got on your iPhone, looking at it. Millennials have come to age in the era of the quantified self, recording their daily steps on Fitbit, their whereabouts every hour of every day on PlaceMe, and their genetic data on 23andMe. They have less civic engagement and lower political participation than any previous group. This is a generation that would have made Walt Whitman wonder if maybe they should try singing a song of someone else. Mm-hmm. Okay, now saying, okay, still, you know, what is this? You know, let's bash the young people. No, it's a reality that technology has exasperated the situation. Let me read a little bit further, and then we'll look at some of this. It says, what millennials are most famous for, besides narcissism, is in fact entitlement. If you want to sell seminars to middle managers, make them about how to deal with young employees who email the CEO directly and beg off projects that they find boring. And then he goes on to quote an English teacher who at Wellesley High School graduation last year gave a 12-minute reality check titled "You Are Not Special," has nearly 2 million hits on YouTube. Climb the mountain so you can see the world, not so the world can see you. That was the address that he gave. That was the advice that he gave. The video has 57 likes for every dislike. Okay, so people are learning something. People are saying, yeah, that is true. There is something to be said about that. And the whole notion of entitlement, that's a whole other issue too. Imagine that you're entitled to something. You're basically, people owe you something. It's interesting. It's an interesting phenomena that we're seeing today. And is defining a generation. I was at the doctor's office the other day. There was 10 of us in the waiting room. Every one of us was on a cell phone, texting or doing something. I don't know if people were playing game. I was texting, checking email, and doing something. You're connected at all times. Yeah, it's fantastic. You got information at your fingertips, but what happens in between? Well, here's an interesting insight in this article. It says, now that cell phones allow kids to socialize at every hour, they send and receive an average of 88 texts a day, according to Pew Research. They're living under the constant influence of their friends. Peer pressure is anti-intellectual. It is anti-historical. It is anti-eloquence, says Mark Barleen, an English professor at Emory, who wrote The Dumbest Generation, How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future. Or, I guess it's a subtitle, Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. Never before in history have people been able to grow up and reach age 23 so dominated by peers. To develop intellectually, you've got to relate to older people, older things. 17-year-olds never grow up if they're just hanging around 17-year-olds. Very well said. I mean, you know, these are things you've got to think about. These are things you've got to consider. And as you read on through the article, it describes a generation that is basically God-loving. They do believe in God, but they're not interested in the institutions. I think for my part, I want to say that this has been true of most generations. I think there is a stage of rebellion that goes on in you, and you may rebel against the easiest things to rebel against, basically those big institutions, and certainly churches are the biggest of them. They certainly have a history and easy to rebel against because of the word hypocrisy, right? So I don't want to say that this is unique to the millennials, but it's an interesting insight. Now I'm going to let you go ahead and read this. I'll put a link on today's show notes. But the reason I share this is because I think many times what we do in church and in any organization, actually, we think about youth in this as this homogenous group that's out there, and because by virtue of their age, we can assign them these characteristics. And you certainly wouldn't do that by virtue of skin color, right? You wouldn't look at somebody and say, well, because this person has a different skin color, he is therefore this. These are the attributes that we give to them. We call that prejudice, judging before you see the content of the character. But somehow with the youth, we are always ready to say this and that. My question is, what have we created that we want the youth to take? We talk about the youth being our future. Okay, very nice. What is it that you want to pass on to the youth? And when you look at it, when you look at a world suffering from its disease, suffering from its inability to find movement in positive directions, inability to communicate one with another, you have to say, what is it that we want to pass along to our young people? Have we created such a panacea, such a utopian society right now that we forget about utopia? Have we created such a wonderful, beautiful world that we're saying to our kids, hey, look what we've done. We want you to take it over. No. In fact, it is from the mouth of babes. It is from those children that we can learn. We can get something out of them. And I think this is so important. I'm going to let you read this article because he goes into a few other things. But in my case, I've always said that if we can look at the young people in the same way that Jesus looked at them, we may understand something profound. For instance, Jesus says, let the little children come to me. Now, this is an interesting place where this passage takes place. It's in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 19. Because, interestingly enough, Jesus spoke about divorce just a few minutes earlier. And he goes on and continues in that divorce conversation. Talk about this is not that you shouldn't divorce. Whatever God has joined together, let no man ever separate, and so on and so on. And then he goes on and he says, let the children come to me. Because the disciples were doing what we so many times do, excluding the youth. The young people had been brought over to Jesus so that he would give a blessing to them. And the disciples looked down their nose at them and said, "These are kids. Don't bother the master. You can't bring kids over here. This is a holy place, a holy man. What are you bringing little kids over here?" And Jesus said, do not hinder them. Do not stifle them. Do not be a barrier for them to come to me, because to such belong the kingdom of heaven. Now, what does that mean? These kids, they're not members of the kingdom of heaven. Listen to that. To them, the kingdom belongs. Ah. Okay, so if it belongs to them, what can we learn from kids? I would tell you a few things that when I see young people, I always see them. First of all, they're all with wonder. You know, when they start off the life with a wonder, a curiosity for new things, for new experiences. And because of that, what do? They take risks. Can we learn from young people about risk-taking, risk management, managing those risks in a positive way? The other day, some woman came up to me and says, "I'm really scared. The stock market went down. What should I do? What do you advise?" And I said, "I don't know. I'm a priest. What are you advising?" "Oh, well, you know, I thought I'd ask you because you seem to have the answers to all these things." And I go, "Oh, thank you very much. But if I did, you know, there'd be, I wouldn't be in debt with my credit card. Let's say it that way. Okay, is that a nice way to say it?" But she kept pressing it, and she says, "Here's my fear." And actually, the reason I'm sharing this with you is because it revealed more about the fears that we all have. It's the fear of risk-taking. She said, "My money is in the stock market, and over the last couple weeks, it's gone down. And I'm scared. I'm scared it's going to keep going down." And I think this, in many senses, is really what we're talking about over here. What kids do a real good job of. They take the risk. Hey, if you're in the stock market, you're going to leave your money in there. You are taking a risk, right? Now, you may make it, in which case you're going to be applauded. You're going to applaud. You're going to be happy. You're going to make it. But you got to also remember that there's a chance that you may not make it. Now, you can do all the positive thinking you want, and I hope you do. You should. You know, hey, I'm positive about this. It's going to happen, everything. But there are times when life, you know, it goes sour. And at those times, you've got to be able to look at life and say, just like a kid does, and look at life and say that, okay, this one didn't work. Now we go to the next one. A kid does that. When he falls off a bicycle, he'll go a couple feet and then he'll get right back on the bicycle and fall another day. If a kid messes up with friends, there's opportunities to make new friends. And they do. A kid is resilient. Youth have that on their side, that resilience. What else? What else can you get from a young person? Well, I like to think about them as sponges. When I see them, when I said that, I just thought of this awful picture, sponges in the negative sense. No, I'm talking about positive sponges, because I work with a lot of kids, like in school environments, and you know, it's just so exciting, because they absorb, they look around. It's not just the lesson that you're writing up there on the whiteboard, it's a lesson that they're seeing in you, what you're doing, and they're absorbing all this. Now think about what we do as grown-ups, as non-youth. We play the know-it-all game, don't we? I know this, I know that. Kids don't have that know-it-allness. I'm talking about little ones. As they get older, of course, they do that. They do that, let me prove who I am. But basically, young kids don't have that know-it-allness. They're willing to learn. They're willing to open their eyes. They're willing to perceive. Let's see, what else about kids? Well, they're dependence on important things. You know, I don't think there is a species on Earth as dependent on their parents as the human species. Right? I mean, maybe there are. Maybe there are in the wild. I don't know of any. But basically, a young child, a human child, just born, will die if the parents aren't there. Parents have to provide food, have to provide shelter, warmth against the elements. Now, other species, the parents do that as well. But for how long? couple weeks. We saw a baby giraffe the other day in Santa Barbara at the zoo. It was standing up. It was, I think, a week old. It was walking around and everything. Let's see human do that. They don't. Humans take time. Humans take time. Humans have a dependence on their parents. And that's definitely something we can learn from kids. I'm not talking about that awful dependence about, you know, I can't do anything without you, mom and dad. But the dependence of trust. Okay? And this is our relationship with our Heavenly Father. To be able to trust God in the same way a child trusts a parent. Okay, a child at age 1 month, 2 months, doesn't really think about it, right? Knows that it's going to get food. Knows that it's going to get milk when it cries. Knows that it's going to be okay. You know, there's going to be some crying at night, but hey, someone will come and take care of me. And this dependence on the parents is an important understanding of our dependence on God. To be able to rely on a power that's greater than us. Not to be lazy about it. Not to just kick back. But to be able to say that I have an assurance. An assurance that comes to me from God. And kids teach us this as well. You see, we haven't created that great world that we should have the audacity to stand up and say, hey kids, come and inherit it. But we certainly can look at them and together as youth, as the young people, and as young people, young-minded people, as I think the Christian community must be if it's going to survive. Not look at a time when the kids can become part of the community, but say that those kids are part of the community. I've been in youth service for the last 30, 35 years when I was a deacon in the priesthood. I'll tell you, every generation that comes by, every young group of young people that come by, I see potential, so much potential. And sadly, I see that potential destroyed because they don't get the encouragement. That encouragement is what is necessary. Not a sermon. Not a lesson, but an encouragement for them to seek their dreams. We talk a lot about youth. We talk about a lot about young people. I hope I was able to share a few ideas. I do encourage you to check out this article. And whatever tradition you might be in, whether it's Catholicism and Orthodoxy, the Anglicans, whatever tradition, I know you've had this conversation. And to our brothers, our Protestant brothers, I know I got a nice letter from a Baptist the other day. I'm sorry, I can't remember your name. It's not right in front of me right now. But it was very touching. And I understand in all communities, people are looking for young people. Take advantage right now of looking at those young people. And seeing what we can learn from them. And realizing that it's a symbiotic relationship where we work with them, they work with us, and then that them word no longer exists. It becomes us, a community, a we, a Christian family. Well, we are at that portion of the show where Anush does a reading of her Inside the Pomegranate blog. This is a blog that she has, and we invite you to read all of them. But she does a reading once a week, and we're really happy to tell you that she's going to be branching out. It is going to be another Epostle podcast coming your way. And I want to encourage you right away, because you don't want to miss any of them, and actually because you're listening to The Next Step today, you get to hear the first one. Okay, this is going to be the first in a series of podcasts. So as of next week, she will be branching out, and we will definitely have links on our show notes. So if you want to get on there, get on the mailing list, and make sure you sign up so you get, well, the Inside the Pomegranate delivered to you every week, right into your email. Wow, look at that, America, huh? Love it. Okay, here is Anush with this installment, a Father's Day edition installment of Inside the Pomegranate.
Hi, this is Anush, and I'm excited about my new podcast, Inside the Pomegranate. I happen to love pomegranates, not only for the incredible fruit that they are, but for the beautiful symbolism that they stand for. The pomegranate is one of the most recognizable symbols of our homeland of Armenia. In Armenian mythology, it was the symbol of fertility, good fortune, and a guardian against the evil eye. This beautiful fruit adorns our stone-carved khatkars and manuscripts. Go to any Armenian art event and you're sure to find pomegranates in the artwork. It's our symbol. For me, it's a symbol of my heritage, and it's also the symbol of imagination, creativity, and life. I mean, open up a pomegranate and look at the seeds that spill out. Each one is ripe with hope, possibility, and sweetness. It's a lot like life, right? My life is full and juicy like a pomegranate. And that's what this podcast will be all about. Life, ripe and juicy. So I hope you tune in weekly and take a peek inside the pomegranate. We'll talk about all kinds of things. Life, family, applied Christianity, helping the homeless, creating, imagining, wellness. It's all here, inside the pomegranate. I have my first pomegranate seed ready for you today. It's about someone very special to me, my dad. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So this past Sunday was Father's Day here in the States. My father passed away over 20 years ago. When you have your own children, you still feel the loss of your father on this day. But because you're busy creating Father's Day for your own family, those memories end up getting set aside. My children are grown now, and they're now including us in their own celebrations. As I saw all the posts on Facebook of friends with their fathers, it made me really miss my own dad. And it gave me time to reflect on some of my memories of him and how much he influenced who I am today. So I put together some things that I learned from my dad, being my father's daughter. Here goes. Number one. You never stop learning till the day you die. My dad taught us that the sky's the limit when it came to learning. He was a true believer in the school of life, and he taught us, his four children, that the day we stop learning is the day we die. He had a natural curiosity. He loved to read. He knew a lot about all sorts of things. We could ask him any question, and he'd know the answer. Or, if he didn't, he'd help us find the answer. We'd take trips as a family to the library every 2 weeks, each of us with our own library card. We'd check out the maximum 10 books and bring them home. We learned all about everything, and we learned the importance of reading. He was always trying new projects. One year, my mom bought him a book about Oriental rugs and how they were loomed. The next thing I knew, he had me in the car, and we were driving across town for the right wool for his project, weaving mini sample rugs on a frame loom that he built. He learned all about natural dyeing of the wool, knotting techniques, even about carding the wool and making your own yarn. Like I said, he was naturally curious. When I saw an article in a magazine about stained glass windows, he encouraged me to try to learn the craft. The very next day we went to buy tools to learn, he encouraged me to sign up for a class. He was always pro-education. Whatever you learned was to your advantage. There was no useless information. Eventually, I loved making stained glass windows so much that I started my own business for a while designing and making windows. All because of that magazine and because of my dad. Number two, play a musical instrument. My father was incredibly musical, and he made sure to pass this love of music on to his children. We all had to pick an instrument that we wanted to play. He sent us off to music lessons when we were young. It wasn't a luxury, it was a necessity. Music was very important. He was a fantastic violinist, self-taught. He helped to pay for his college by working as a gypsy violinist at a restaurant. He'd wear a scarf and a clip-on hoop earring and his Armenian shalvar pants. And he'd set out to play dinner music on his violin. My mom told me he was quite the romantic. But it didn't stop at the violin. He played the mandolin, the oud, and the duduk as well. He was my duet partner. We were always working on perfecting Bach's double violin concerto in D-flat minor, Dad on violin, and me on the flute. Measure by measure, we'd go through the runs and the timing. I'd get so frustrated because there was definitely a difference between blowing and bowing. We even worked one summer together at Ports of Call in San Pedro, a little touristy village here in Southern California with little seaside shops and people milling about. We were hired as strolling musicians to play for the tourists. That was a real fun summer and great memories. Number 3, be kind to the homeless, tip street musicians, and buy lemonade from lemonade stands. I had painted this on the wall of my kitchen in my old home because I think this really gave me a sense of who my father was. He was a softie, kind and compassionate. He is the reason that I'm involved in our homeless ministry, because as a child we were told to be kind to the homeless, to care for them, provide for them. On holidays we would deliver mom's home-cooked food to our community's homeless, on bus benches, behind stores. My father taught me that the homeless are just people like you and me, and that we should be kind to them because others aren't. I think because my father had been a street musician, we would help them as well. Good or bad, if they were playing on the street, he would always slip us money to put in their open case. And lemonade? Who doesn't love lemonade? And who doesn't love children? We would pull over for lemonade stands to encourage the children that were selling. Not only would he buy the lemonade, but he would slurp it down, making the kids giggle. And he'd smile at them and thank them and tell them it was really the best lemonade he had ever had. Number 4. The kitchen is the soul of the house. I've told you about Dad's violin playing. He would lose himself in his music. And his favorite room to do it in? The kitchen. In fact, he would do almost everything in the kitchen, including read, weave, and of course play the violin. This would drive my mom crazy, because he would plant himself right in the center and play one of his concerti. She'd be trying to cook dinner or deal with one of us 4 kids, and there he'd play. He loved the kitchen and explained it this way. The kitchen is the soul of the house. It's where we gather to eat, to pray around the table. It's a family place. What better place would there be to spend your time at home? We were lucky. We lived in a large California craftsman home that had a square kitchen layout. But later on, when my parents moved to a different home, their kitchen was a galley-shaped long kitchen. One of my favorite photos is of my dad holding my daughter Ani on his lap. She was probably all of 2 or 3, and by then my parents had moved to this house. The kitchen in the new place was long, like I said, and there's Dad sitting on a chair smack in the middle of the narrow kitchen, reading a storybook to my daughter. Priceless. Number 5. Don't be satisfied with a C. This was an important one. We could never be happy with getting C's on our report card. A C meant you were satisfactory, and while that was okay for some, it was not good enough for my dad. Getting a C meant that you weren't applying yourself, that you were just okay. As a kid, I only applied this to my grades, but as I grew older, I realized there was a greater message he was getting across. Don't be satisfied with just okay. Be the best you can be. Do the best you can do. Try to do better. Always ask yourself, is this the best I can give? The idea was not to be afraid to be uncomfortable in your quest to do better. Push yourself. Apply yourself. So you see, there are so many things that I can tell you about my dad. He was really an incredible person and a loving father. When he passed away at age 58, the loss was huge. But I felt an even deeper loss for my children who would grow up not knowing his love, his wit, and to be able to experience his beautiful smile and his strong hugs. He taught me so much about life, about myself, and the older I get, the more I find that I have some of his same quirks, like leaving my shoes laying around the house, playing my flute in the kitchen, whistling through my teeth. I can't pass a street musician without leaving a tip. I can't pass a homeless person without saying hello, and I always stop to buy lemonade from lemonade stands. His simple lessons are instilled in all of us kids, and in my mom, too. I'll close with a cute little story because today would have been my parents' 58th anniversary. Several years ago, on my parents' anniversary, my mom stopped at the cemetery to put flowers on Dad's grave. As she pulled up, she noticed the sprinklers were on. She sat in the car and, after waiting a long time, decided that maybe she would just say her prayers in the car, leave the flowers at the curb, and come back another time. As she was saying her prayer, she heard my father's voice. "Is this the best you can do, Anne?" She had to smile because she knew what she had to do. She got out of the car with the flowers, walked across the grass, getting soaked by the sprinklers, to go pay Dad a visit. And as she stood there all wet, she just knew inside that my dad was looking down, smiling. Happy Father's Day to all of you dads out there, and all of you single moms that fill Dad's shoes too. Well, until next week, this is Anush wishing you a pomegranate day filled with hope and ripe with possibilities.
What a beautiful, beautiful piece that is. Thank you so much, Anush. There's like stories inside of stories, isn't there? Hey, you can read Anush's blog. It's at Inside the Pomegranate. There is a link on our show notes. And like I said, once a week she comes in front of the Apostle microphone and she reads one of her blogs. There are so many others that I invite you to get out there and read. And what we're going to be doing starting next week, this will be an independent piece. Actually, this one that you just heard will be the first in a series of audio blogs called, appropriately, Inside the Pomegranate. And when you go to the page, actually, today in the blog, you will see the picture she refers to with Ani. So a lot of good stuff over there. Do check it out. And we're so glad that we're going to be able to launch this as a new podcast in the Apostle family. And to tell you about the Apostle family, here is Susie.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Are you going to join us? No, okay. We'll see if we can get the piano player to join us at our 5th anniversary celebration. It's going to be taking place next Sunday on the 30th. We're going to be in Glendale at the Acapulco. And as Susie says, you know, these podcasts are made free and available to you, and they're yours for the taking. Please do share them. Please, I know you find value in the comments that you share with us, in the emails that you'd give us. Those go such a long way. Please, please do remember us in your prayer and your generous support. Thank you so much for being part of this ministry. Hey, we are at the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to invite you throughout the week to get involved at all of our web presence places, epostle.net. You'll find today's podcast and all of our podcasts, including the new Anush Inside the Pomegranate podcast. And also check out the Facebook pages we have. Apostle, In His Shoes, St. Peter Armenian Church, it's all there for you. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Vaya, our webman, for Anush with her pomegranate seeds, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.